Hello, everyone out there. Oh my God, I've got stuff in my way. How dare I? You think someone at home who's been quarantined, whose wife was sick, and now we were all tested and cleared, and I'm even breaking my rule about dating this podcast, would have his shit together on a Thursday afternoon, and the first thing we're going to see is, actually, you know, covering up my ugly mug, not such a bad thing. Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of Attack of Opportunity, the interview, the casual discussion, the ever you want to call it, because we really can't decide what it is. We're going to let you decide what this is. Today, I have a very special guest, someone that... You ever have somebody that, you know, you lose track of and you reach out and you run into them and they're one of those, oh yeah, you know, we should totally, totally, right? And then you go away and they're like, yeah, they're going to call me back, you know, and then you call them back and you go, oh man, I'm so busy and yeah, the type of thing. And you're like, no problem, you know, we'll get together, call you back. And you're like, motherfucker, he's not going to call me back. No, today in my virtual studio, we have someone I've been following since the beginning of their career. Someone out of self-interest, because again, we are still dabbling with our own version of a pure steam done into Carrion Crown under Philip Trout. It's coming our way. We've even named it. We've named the puppy. So now it's got to come out to here. But have you ever referenced source material? Have you ever reached out and looked for inspiration from other podcasts about if you're going to do your own, I like what this guy does, I like what she does, that kind of thing? Well, I'm telling you, the number one Carrion Crown podcast out there, my book, is run by this guy right here. It is my privilege, my honor, and my hopefully a future virtual drinking buddy, Mr. Griffin Norman of the Laughter Hideous, Hideous Laughter. What is the name of your podcast?
It's the Hideous Laughter Podcast, my friend.
I thought you had to change it because of copyright, because that's the spell, and somebody told me, oh, you know what?
That would be Tasha's Hideous Laughter.
I'm going to kill Messina because he convinced me that I had the name backwards. Okay. One of my cast members getting a beating. Griffin, thank you so much for being on the show today.
No problem. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm excited.
So, you know, you're still staying with a little bit of the old format. How did you first know that you were a geek, a nerd, one of us, one of us?
How did I first know I was a geek, a nerd, one of us? Well, it had to be in my younger days playing profuse numbers of Game Boy Color games. And I learned to read on the Pokemon games. I played them in Japanese before they came out in English. And that to a young kid for Gold and Silver version was a mess. Didn't go very well. But beyond that, a lot of video games, I tended towards the RPG genre, especially JRPGs. And so played a lot of the Final Fantasy games, played the Mana series, the Dragon Quest series. Those were my footsteps into fantasy, I suppose. And from a pretty young age, I was reading Stephen King, which kind of molded me towards the horror slant of fantasy. I think that made me some of the person I am today. I really enjoy horror stuff, getting geeky with horror movies, something that we don't really explore too heavily on our podcast, but that Steve from the show and I really like to do, is dive into horror movies, kind of dissect them. Why were they scary? That kind of thing. So I'm geeky in a couple of different ways. I'm a little crafty geeky. I make all my own dice. I make my friends' dice. All of the podcast crew has custom resin dice made by me. So I built our gaming. This table that I'm sitting at right now has a convenient cup holder that I'm using. And the microphone is actually in a recess, which is a vault filled with neoprene. I built all that. A lot of my hobbies end up tangentially related to tabletop or other geekery. I think I've had like every system since I've been able to make money. Since I was an adult, I've had every single gaming system that is out, plus a gaming PC. It's overkill and it's unnecessary, but when I have a buddy that's like, oh, I'm a PS4 guy, I probably can't. Before the days of crossplay, that was it. I was like, well, I have it too. I got everything. So like whatever you want to play on, I'm good.
Right on.
So I think that's kind of how I got here. A little bit of reading, a little bit of video games. And then, man, it must have been 5 years ago, we met one of my great friends, Eric. He had been a society GM and playing Pathfinder, and we got to talking at a bar, as usually happens when I meet new friends, and discussed the, you know, getting the group together. We had four or five people that were interested in playing, but never got the chance and didn't know the rules very well. He took us all in under his wing and ran us through Skulls and Shackles. And that was my first Pathfinder experience. Got me really excited about GMing. And then I started GMing Rise of the Rune Lords and a bunch of other stuff, and the rest is history. Now I GM Carrion Crown for the fine folks that listen.
After such a big lead-in about, you know, how I know you, how I want to know you, I don't really know you, this is actually technically as much back and forth with emails, and you get private messaging someone on Twitter, as I tend to do, and you get a feel for someone, like their tone and everything. Just for the record, you know, technically this is the first time we've sort of met in person, even though it's, you know, across the country, that kind of thing. But one thing I like to do with my guests is vet them a little bit, especially if they have an actual, like, not a personal Facebook page, but a Facebook page for the pod.
Sure.
Yeah. Or if I talk to them and say, you know, do you have a favorite photo of yourself doing what you do on your personal Facebook? And they're like, oh, yeah, yeah. go here and do this type of thing. So for the podcast audience, because we do have a video aspect of this going now on our YouTube page, and possibly like a restream later, for the podcast audience, I have this lovely slideshow going, and you will see Griffin's dice. You will see the amounts of alcohol that just line the shelves around the room, and you will see the
sit everywhere.
That sit everywhere. And the lovely, lovely ladies of Hideous Laughter, who I had the distinct privilege of interviewing earlier this year. And so we've dug into the ladies a bit, and I'd like to talk to yourself about GMing. I'd like to talk to yourself about yourself and your cast that couldn't be here today. Now, out of the gate, you've already answered like several of my questions. That's great. That's great. Like I said, we got your background story, the heavy video game, the, you know, your Stephen King angle that led you into the horror. I'd like to touch on that again, because I'm looking for, with each guest, something a little unique, something we haven't talked about. I've had one single guest that's a crafter like yourself, Crafty from Tabletop, and you said you make your own dice, like your own resin dice.
Yes.
How do you do that? I want to start there.
It's a kind of in-depth process, but it's not as hard as you think. You'll have a lot of failures, and they won't look as cool as you want to start off. But what it is in essence is I have a resin 3D printer. So the first part is 3D modeling your own dice, or you could use a set of dice that you have lying around for this if you like the style of them. It just gets into a little bit of a legal gray area if you're using like Chessex dice, because they have all their fonts and stuff are patented. Mm-hmm. So you get a master set of dice. So I printed mine on my 3D printer. You could grab any set. What you do from there is you actually cast them, or you cast the mold around them in silicone. So silicone doesn't stick to dice, doesn't stick to resin, but it makes a dimensionally accurate and perfect replica, or like negative of the die. Once you get there, yeah, exactly. Once you get there, it's really just mixing up some resin and finding some cool stuff to put inside the dice. So I've done moss, I've done glitter, I've done seashells, I've done different colors, different powders, that kind of stuff. It feels a lot like crappy alchemy, especially when some stuff comes out and it's not what you expected at all. But you really put what you want into the dice. And then I use a pressure pot. You don't necessarily need one, but I cast my dice under pressure to remove the bubbles from them and make them crystal clear. And once you do that, you wait 24 hours, you take them out. It's a kind of involves sanding and polishing process, but once that's done, you got a set of dice. Ink them whatever color you want. If you paint minis, then you can use your mini paints to ink dice. Some people don't know that. Some people feel like you need like a marker or a sealer or something. No, you can just use mini paints, and they turn out really cool. I have a couple here. They probably won't come out very well on webcam, or it won't want to focus for me. But it doesn't want to
pull it back. Pull it back a bit. Pull it back.
There we go. You see that?
Sorry, keep talking and pull it back.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like that's a really sick amber with like a green.
Yeah, yeah, the green font. I call them the pumpkin patch.
Oh, right on.
but it's a fun way to pass the time. You got to be patient, but it's pretty slick when you can gift everybody at your table a bespoke set. I've very much enjoyed doing it.
Oh, that's cool. Everybody needs a hobby, I suppose, even someone as busy as yourself.
A side hobby.
Yeah.
Side hustle.
Now, something a lot of people don't know about, like, what is resin? One of my cast members, Ryan Messina, makes his own miniatures and stuff, and he started off with this powder. Like, he showed me in the basement. It looked like cement in a bag, and he mixes it in a big industrial pail and this type of thing. And I've seen videos like Evan and Kate, and they love resin. And when you're done mixing the liquids and the powder or whatever you need to put the stuff together, the best way I could describe it, it's like pouring very pure, clear maple syrup into.
Yep.
Am I right?
that's very accurate.
Okay.
That's spot on.
Okay. So yeah. In layman's term, it's the clear maple syrup of the, you know, yeah, that kind of thing.
It gets less sticky over time.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Well, you sold me, Master Griffin. How much? Where can I get these dice?
I don't have dice for sale yet. Maybe someday. Maybe someday.
Yeah, I would like to right here now order some custom Attack of Opportunity dice.
All right. I like the sound of that.
Yeah. Be their first customer, right? It's like, well, I knew Griffin back when he was only making these out of his garage. You know, kind of.
He didn't have 7 pressure pots.
No, he only one, you know. Where are the cast members now? You know, Griffin, the Empire of Dice, and you know, the podcast gone aside. No.
4 years later, the resin fumes did him in.
You get your cold cast of slave labor churning away. You guys want a game? We got another batch we got to do. Right? Like Breaking Batch, right? Let's cook.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I'll make some crystal blue ones.
There you go. We're going to do a show, you and me. We're going to call it Breaking Batch. So Breaking Bad, and we'll tell you, talk about nothing but crafting stuff, and you can explain to me, and I'll just try to like visualize in layman's terms. Is this another maple syrup thing? No.
Is this maple syrup? It's like Pop Rocks, right? That one.
Yeah, find something.
What do we put in there?
Put something in real life so morons like myself can understand what you're talking about. Anyway, so something I love asking GMs. You're into the horror genre. You're doing Karen Crown. You've already did. You were playing Skulls and Shackles and stuff. In your gaming career, when you're not GMing, do you have a favorite something, a favorite race, a class, an alignment that like it's Griffin's go-to class? Like everyone just expects it of you.
People will say that my favorite race is probably Tiefling. I've played a lot of Tieflings, but I really enjoy the small races, so I'll play a Halfling, I'll play a Gripply in Pathfinder. I kind of enjoy the small race that does big damage. So to me, I mean, my most iconic, like I'm playing this, is a Inquisitor, and I think that's because I like to skill monkey around. It's a very versatile class. I can kind of do it with anything, but I played a Bard the longest. And really, really enjoyed the Banner of the Ancient Kings build with the huge party buff and like just poking stuff from the back. That was pretty fun. So I guess when I'm playing, it's either an Inquisitor, a Bard, or probably a Beat Stick. And that's been lately when I have a lot of GMing projects on my plate. When I get to play, I like to play something that's really easy, really simple to. You know, I can just lay chill and roll the dice and do big damage and don't have to track my spells, track my spell list.
You know, I got a game for you. Ryan Messina offered to take the GMing square, and he's like, I want you guys to do up 10th level guys. I swear, he must have just watched the anime Goblin Slayer, because he's like, I got these goblins, and it's a one-shot. We're going to do it in one night. Make up a 10th level character, and we're like, where is this coming from? He's like, I'm gonna do a one shot just for something different so that you guys can get your, and he literally said, your hedonistic joy of game, like, you know, like, he's like, make up, I don't care what it is, he's like, make up a 10th level guy and we're gonna throw you in this town, the valley would have, and so you know, my guys, because we've done so many different pods, these guys are still creeping anywhere from first to fifth level, like they're just you know, we're spread so thin that we're leveling and the shows are progressing so slowly, it's a cost of, you know, doing so many.
Yeah.
So of course they're all jumping at this, right? And it's like I totally want to, you know, just surprise Ryan and like bring you in with like a 10th level slaughterhouse, some tiny little dude with big damage going, and Ryan's like, who's this guy? I was like, no, never mind who he is, just watch what he does, right?
Just check out this gloom blade.
Yeah, check this stuff out, you know, because we're gonna record everything and
that'll be fun.
Yeah, like a crossover or whatever, like, you know, I should convince my cast to stand down and just give them you guys. playing the part of Jeff Ball tonight will be actually Griffin Norman with his killer machine of, you know, here you go, eat it, Messina, you know. To get him back. One thing about our cast is we always talk about stuff that we would do if we went to a convention or, you know, that kind of thing that we, you know, we could kind of do in crossover and stuff, and we never really get a chance. And when I saw that gleam in your eye about like, and when I do play, this is what happened, you know, so I couldn't help like literally invite you live. let's talk about where does the magic happen? Like, there's some great shots I got in the slideshow here of the literal, you know, like you said, homemade table. And yep. It looks like a glass case surrounded in wood for the minis. Like, you got to lift it, put the map under, drop this big sort of granddad glass case with a wood molding all the way around it. And then you just put minis on top and draw ink on. Is that what I'm looking at here?
So what you're looking at is that's the HLP studio. So we have a room in mine and Haley's house is converted to the gaming room, the studio. It's got, you know, if you weren't looking at me facing the one curtain in our room, you'd see acoustic paneling all over the place. And really, it's the table I built, seats six. The insert that you're seeing is actually just a 42-inch TV with a wood frame around it and then a cut-to-fit plexiglass piece so that the TV screen doesn't get scratched up. You can put minis on it. I run Fantasy Grounds from my PC. You can see in the background. Run that to the table, and we play from there. So instead of doing a fully virtual game, I'm really using it for just the maps, and the players get to have their cool minis and have their painted minis and play around with the stuff that they painted and made. And it gives me the opportunity to use my 3D printer to print big nasties and throw them down on the table instead of have them as a just an image.
That is so cool. You know, I've got a technical crafting question for you. I took this over here, this 50-inch television, and I was upstairs in a bedroom before I came down to the basement. And we took the doors off a closet, and all I did was set it in the closet, right? And I had a fan blowing out so it wouldn't get overheated. Mm-hmm. How do you keep your TV that's completely encased from overheating?
So what you won't see in the pictures is that there's grooves in the sides that allow air to escape. And it's also not all the way flat on the ground. So there's a lip on every side, and the TV actually sits in because the screen is a little bit bigger than the body. And so it sits on the lip and stays about 3 inches off the ground. That's why the case is kind of, if you look at it in the pictures, it's kind of tall. It's much taller than a flat screen TV. Mm-hmm. So it's got that air underneath, and it can escape out the sides. So it doesn't overheat. It does a pretty good job.
Do you have any fans going? Because that was the one problem I had in the studio was as soon as you put a fan in the room, it corrupts your audio. Sure.
No, we don't have a fan going. So the way we record is we record an episode at a time generally. So that doesn't really give the TV that much time to overheat. If you're recording hour and a half, 2 hours, it won't ruin anything, at least in our experience. So no fan, but lots of ventilation. Think of like your Surface laptop where it doesn't have an internal fan, but it still can operate under load for a decent period of time. It's like that. It still has the airflow. It just doesn't escape system, I guess.
So without giving out personal information about like your address, and we'd have a lineup of people, including myself, peeking in your front window, you know, where does the magic happen? You're in the States?
Yeah, we all live in Columbus, Ohio. Everybody records locally. That's made, I guess, the current landscape a little bit difficult because obviously we're not meeting locally mm-hmm. anymore. But we've been lucky enough to record a huge bank of episodes beforehand. So we actually still have a decent amount of runway left until we actually run out of live in studio recorded content and have to move to solution.
I guess we're lucky now because like we, even though I had two guys in town, we're half Canadian, half American, and we got guys all over North America. So what we're doing right now, the Zoom chat and everything, was always just sort of the way it had to be done.
Yeah.
And we're managing to put up content where so many people trailed off. But I am more than happy to, you know, share what little I know with anyone, yourself or anyone wants to approach us at www.rollmongers.com. Give us an email at rollmongers@gmail.com. And we're happy, more than happy to share what little knowledge we have of like setting up something virtually and, you know, that type of thing. Especially if you already have mics around a table. And if you guys are using laptops as opposed to pen and paper. You know, that kind of thing. The transition to like getting used to Roll20 or even someone like Fantasy Grounds that were lucky enough to sponsor us, it's a bit of a learning curve there. There's a give and take. I mean, that immediate group chemistry, unfortunately, is gone. But you come off of your workday or whatever you're doing on a Friday night or a Sunday afternoon, and you've got that game on feeling, you get absorbed. It's like playing a video game on Xbox with your buddies. You know, you get back into that chemistry. You get back into that, you know, I got you. You know, even though they're not in the room with you, you know, there's still some live chemistry going on. You just got to picture it more of a Xbox headset controller and the guys at his house. But you sink into it. You know?
Yeah, we've, although we haven't done it for the main show, Steve and I play a remote game with Southern Tomfoolery. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're a Starfinder podcast.
No, we I interviewed David?
Adam, GM?
I'm sorry. It was a little while back.
no worries.
I love Adam. He was one of the very first Starfinder interviews we did, and I had a great time with him. He plays music. He's in a band.
He's a musician.
And I chatted him up, for as long as he let me bend his ear. Gotta love the Southern guys. They're too polite to like hang up on you. You can just ask them a million questions.
CFDM. It's great.
They're great. I love Southern Tomfoolery. I love their logo, the possum. Oh, yeah. The possum yeah. with, you know, actually, yeah, you know, it great. Was the possum that made me contact Adam. And I have them on my Discord, and I talk to them once in a while, because we try to keep everyone that we talk to. We try to collect you all and put you in plastic and then forget about you in a drawer, right? Kind of thing. We off the air, you know, we how many times did I say when we first met and we talked for like 20 minutes going, damn it, we should be recording this. You know, your answers are great. We're getting to know each other, and we're just talking about the community, how great it is. So here's a perfect example. Adam from Southern Tomfoolery, a Starfighter podcast. You got to check these guys out. They are in other Discord servers, and everyone's chat, like even their fans, as well as the cast and other GMs like yourself, myself or whatever, are just like, hey, and you know, everyone drops ideas about their games, whether it's off the mic or on the mic. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's been great. We actually released, I want to say, 12 episodes of Attack of the Swarm with them. So Steve and I from our podcast are players in that. It's not like a full-on podcast thing. It's like a here's an archive.org link. Listen if you want to. Mm-hmm. But it's super fun. And we've been doing crossover stuff like that all the time. We did a game with Wheeler Woe. We played, what was it? It was Apocalypse World. We played Apocalypse World with them, which was the first time I'd ever played it, and it was a really good time. I think we're playing some of the All at the Table games with the MN Maxed folks, or Min Maxed. I don't know how they prefer to say it.
Yeah, but, I've got him on the table for, again, them through Discord, through Jason Ellis, who the community loves. Shout out to Jason. You know, I got these guys all lined up for interviews to tell, you know, to tell not just me, but to tell everyone their story, what they're doing. And I would really like to see the lurking community realize that there is a chatty community that they shouldn't be shy about. That they should get in there, and you know, because all these guys are so welcoming in their Discord servers, you know, so quick to give you a link. It's not an isolated, well, you know, do you like 5e converted to Star Wars, and that's just us, right? Now, this community as well, not to rag on them, is a big community, and again, very welcoming, but I guess it's a bad example. Just pick something off the top of my head, like a segregation kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think you get that a lot with our Pathfinder community, our smaller Pathfinder community, and the D&D, the TTRPG community at large. It happens sometimes where people will rag on 5th edition or whatever. That's one thing I really liked about getting to talk to some folks that are doing even some Paizo products that are newer and that have moved in from the 5th edition space and can kind of objectively weigh both systems and show that there are merits to both. I'm a Pathfinder guy. I always have been. That's just what I cut my teeth on, and I didn't want to move from it. But I try not to say like, hey, 5th edition isn't cool. Like, I've never played it. And honestly, it has its spot. And just because we play Pathfinder doesn't mean I don't want to be a part of the larger community with the 5th edition podcast and that kind of stuff. I think it does make our little space of the internet a little bit more interesting that we do a different game, that there are less of us, that it's kind of like a person like Jason, great guy, can compile a list by himself of all of the Adventure Pass podcasts and all of the homebrew podcasts that are running Paizo stuff, and he can keep up with it and he can do it on his own. And we have, although a smaller group of references, so many great people to bounce ideas off of. And even in any given Adventure Path, there's usually one or two podcasts that are running it. And so, I mean, the Gathering of the Ages guys have been a great resource for us. They're running Carrion Crown, and they're much more family focused than we are. So there, it's a completely different show, completely different vibe. But Spencer, their GM, is such a nice guy. And folks like that, it's like nobody's ever tearing each other down in this community. I feel like if you're quiet in the community, you're just missing out. I mean, you can attest to that. If you're not chatting with some of these people, it's just your loss, because they're going to give you so many more ideas than you ever thought of. They're going to share their different worlds with you. They're going to talk about their shows, but they'll talk about other shows they like. I mean, I listen to 30 different podcasts about that are all just APs or homebrews of TTRPGs. And it's because the community is so awesome that I'm like, hey, I'm really invested in you. Let me get invested in your story. You're telling a really cool story. This is awesome. But a lot of times for me, it's happened that I enjoy the person first and then figure out their podcast is cool, not the other way around, which you'll never find out if you're quiet. I guess the moral of my story.
No, that's good. One thing I found in the community is for myself, or stickler on audio quality, but it was a kind of a just to try to get as best we could on a budget that I put forth. And by budget, I mean just racking up debt. It's a surmountable amount of debt. But that was a personal choice. But a lot of people don't gravitate to something I saw on the net was, if a podcast doesn't have good audio, forget it, right? I get that. I totally, totally get that. But you could still miss out on a really, really good story, on really good people and really good chemistry if you don't mind just picturing yourself sitting at this table with the lone Yeti in the middle and the echo and the drinking and the, you know what I mean? It's whatever your jam is. One of our most popular shows is our worst recording ever. There was a beta test came out for second edition Pathfinder, and everyone was running the, what was it? The one that jumps you through the level. Oh, geez, I can't.
Yeah. I can't remember.
Doom of Age or Apocalypse. Doom of Defiance. No, something Doom. You know what I'm talking about, right? Okay.
I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
A lot of people don't know this, but when Paizo, before they start dropping core books, they wrote adventures for their world for 3.5 D&D. Yep. And one of my favorite adventures are two that are in the Assyrian Desert. It's a fifth, sixth level adventure called Entombed with the Pharaohs, followed up by a seventh, eighth level adventure called the Stone-Packed Pyramid. And in it, they touch upon that storyline for Doomsday Dawn. Doomsday Dawn, that's it.
Yep.
For Tombsday Dawn.
We found it.
You run into NPCs that have like this clock that's in a little dragon that's ticking down and all this. And you go into the pyramid, and one of the four pharaohs of ascension was a number guy, and he loved astrology. And he's looking at Octurn, the planet, like something's coming and all this stuff, right? And when you get to Doomsday Dawn, when you're reading through, there's like a paragraph that mentions both those adventures. Like the bad guy did this. He created a subspace called the Hollow. And he made a pyramid, and he left, and he went on, and it's like, oh my God, wait a minute, whoa, the Hollow, that's the entire adventure base for the first and Tomb of the Pharaohs, where they go in the desert, and they summon a pyramid from beyond space and time, and it's made of this green turquoise stuff, and it's like, that's the Hollow, like, does anyone else know this? Am I that old?
And it's just so interesting how everything in their stories is so interconnected. I mean, you can find references to stuff in old society scenarios, and that kind of thing, that the world is, I think, one of the biggest draws for me to Paizo products.
Oh, yeah.
I even loved, like, we jumped on Starfinder right away when it came out. Haley ran us through Dead Sons, and I loved that there were references to almost all of the Pactworld planets in Pathfinder years ago. And then, you know, they're coming up as a Pactworld planet, and here's the natives to that planet. And, oh, like, Triaxis, like, you visited this in Reign of Winter or whatever. Oh, spoiler.
Yeah, no, there's, I remember there's one, but I was listening to Androids and Aliens, and they meet these pirates, and there's a total Skull and Shackles reference dropped, you know, subtly. Yep. But it's like, oh, that's so cool, right? I love that stuff. We literally have in our Dice Before Dishonor, shameless plug, War for the Crown, there's Pathfinder Society adventures that run up to it and into it, and they take a first level party and they put them in a 10th level situation. And then they conveniently, the first level players get to escape the horror. Well, the Pathfinder Society adventure that was running the same day literally shows up to fix it. And I don't want to spoil anything, but imagine a room full of people where they lock the doors and everyone starts freaking out. And your first level guys are in there going, oh, shit, what do we do? The players are given a convenient way out. right? On the outside of the doors, here comes the 7th to 10th level Pathfinder Society guys going, we got to get these doors open. We got to get in there and save these people. And I was just like, oh, that is so cool. We are so doing that, you know. And so we started this spinoff, Echoes of Honor, which led up not to propping, not only propping backstory for our characters, but, you know, to show that, to at least once, to show that how, if you want more, something as big as an AP with 6 adventures long, if you even want more, check out the Society adventures that are in, around, lead up to it, you know, move items and, you know, that kind of thing. Like, I have a huge, huge respect for Paizo's writing that do that. I love that kind of thing. Watching the Avengers series and then all the sub-movies.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Even, it's exactly like
even
that.
Even Thor 2. I mean, come on, you watched it anyway.
The Dark World?
Yeah, like everybody watched it anyway, at least once, right? You know?
You have to.
Ant-Man stuff. So this is how I was pitching this to my cast. I was like, okay, we're going to do Civil War, you know, but I want to make sure that we do the Ant-Man movie first leading up to it so you guys know who he is. Sure, they cover it, but, you know, and it's like doing Civil War without Ant-Man. But it's like, no, I'm putting that in. And again, it just slows everything right down to a crawl. So I want to talk to you about happy accidents. This is a great new question that I pulled off of a player, someone I was interviewing. They just told me about this happy accident that not only like stayed in the show, became like a trope. And I don't mean like a joke where like you play long enough, there's running jokes. That's one of the coolest things about a podcast is if you get invested, something happens early on or halfway through and it's an accident, it's a joke, someone says the right thing, they won't let it go. And the DM finds a way to visit it, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Over and over.
Right?
Yeah,
sure. Great, great fun. But then I've learned interviewing some people, they're like, you know, they tell you the real story. It's like, this was a total accident. Like so-and-so's cat, you know, jumped up or I knocked over my beer or, you know, so-and-so couldn't make it that day. And we got this guy from this pod and something, like, it was something like that screwed up that had this great happy ending that stays in the show. And the fans are all like, this is so great. And you're like, well, we're never going to tell anybody this. Cause we totally meant to do that. So I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot for that. I should have prepped you for
something. Oh no, that's fine.
But can you think of anything that was literally like a happy accident? That's just, you know, that you guys enjoy that you kept in the show, whether the audience knows or not, for yourself, or is there something that the fans have latched onto? And you're like, we never thought they would just cling to that thing, incident, you know, happy accident.
Yeah.
Is it called?
I think in the first couple of episodes, I accidentally left in Brooks's I Knew It, and he kept doing it. So if you listen to any of our episodes, Brooks, one of my players, at the very end, after I do the whole finish your drinks, we'll see you next week, he says, I knew it every time. And that started as us leaving it in when we released our first block of 4 episodes. And he did it every time. And then he was like, I'm never going to not do this. So he does it at the end of every episode. I think some other examples of this, at least for me, are just names I kind of throw out there as stuff that I feel like is a completely background situation that'll never get revisited. For instance, when my players were in very early in book 1 of Kyrian Crown, I had a tombstone in there and it was supposed to be this creepy haunt where the player sees their name as the name on the tombstone and then shakes it off and it goes back to normal. And I said the name on the tombstone was Jasmine Phoenix. That character then became like the boss. We do what's called an evil interlude. We do them occasionally. They're the backstory of Kyrian Crown told from a party of Whispering Way characters. And so Jasmine Phoenix ended up being killed by that party. Somebody on Twitter randomly said, I want to know what happened to Jasmine Phoenix. And it was like a light bulb. I was like, wait, who's Jasmine Phoenix? Oh, that's the tombstone lady from 10 episodes ago. Okay, cool. I could work with that. And we did a 3 episode homebrew arc on who Jasmine Phoenix was and why the Whispering Way wanted to kill her. So
you did
three full episodes. I think it was a 5-hour arc on this character that was just a name on a tombstone. So I mean, we like to react to stuff that fans are interested in, but that's too juicy to pass up.
That's cool. I got something. I want a little tangent for you, but I got to come back to this awesome Halloween costume get up. I'm popping up, but I keep forgetting to mention, right? Because I have photos of the dice, and like you even answered before I asked about the dice, like, sweet, you know, I didn't even know you were making those. because I, and this is something I'm trying to improve on the show. It's just like, you know, when I put up a slideshow, it's like, oh, I should, if anyone has pictures of the dice they use, because that's a thing. People collect dice. Sure, they love the dice, right? What do they drink? And that just becomes a thing, you know, got to make it out of focus so you don't get in trouble for showing a brand name, right? What are they, what are they doing, right? You know, because you can't eat on a podcast. You can't be your chips, right? So it's like drinking is all you can do. And sometimes
well, people will tell you that, actually. People will tell you you can't eat on a podcast. But our behind the scenes show, I want to say 3 episodes ago, so we do it every other week, called Zone of Truth. But we did eat, we tried 9 fast food fish sandwiches on air. Oh,
okay.
And reviewed them. We were really scraping the barrel at that point for ideas. And it was 6 guys in a room eating cold fish sandwiches and reviewing them. And I don't think I've ever had more fun that wasn't TTRPG related. Oh, it was completely absurd, but we got away with chewing on mic.
That's awesome. You showed me. That's great. That's really good. No, cool. I'm sorry. I'm trying to get to the next question. It's right in front of my face, but I'm just picturing you guys like with like. There's that joke about how McDonald's filet of fish is like the one sandwich no one orders.
Yeah, I mean, it was like full on sweaty room, smelled like fish sandwiches.
Oh, wow.
Like too much tartar sauce. You do not want to be in that. We had to like leave the windows open in the studio for a couple of days just to, all right, let's get the funk out.
Oh, that's so cool. How many different shows do you have? Because we keep dialing over to like you talk about. Oh, yeah. We did this show. Like, how many different shows have you got?
So we have the main Hideous Laughter podcast. I think we just released episode 89 today. So that's been going on for 1.5 years, maybe a little longer. Then we have the Zone of Truth, which we do every other week. And that's a behind the scenes show. Sometimes we interview guests. Sometimes we eat filet fish sandwiches. Most times we talk about what was happening on the show. Sometimes we'll have one of the players on just to talk about what their character was going through, big character moments. Then we do like a My Favorite Monster segment where we talk about the stat block and how you would use one of the monsters that was either on the show or was just interesting to us. But then we also talk about the actual real world backstory lore to that monster. So it's kind of like a, here's the legend of this monster. Here's the stat block. Here's what it is in Pathfinder. Here's how I would use it. So we do that pretty frequently. Then our other side show is the Hideous Laughter Evil Interlude. And that's not nearly as frequent. We do it every other month. We release kind of like a 3-hour episode. And it's a whole nother group, a whole different party with all the same people, but they're all playing evil characters. And it's set in the same, like in Ustalav, tangentially to Carrion Crown, but just to give some of the backstory of the AP, which is kind of hard to get sometimes. I find that a lot of APs are written where there's so much juicy stuff that the players are never going to get to hear, and on a podcast that the listeners are never going to get to hear. So we wanted to do that show just to unearth some of that.
I just overlaid a photo, and is this a Halloween party or are these your actual characters? You look like a cross between Alice Cooper and Marilyn Manson. Haley is serving some evil looking cookies. Got a guy doing up like Catman, and I love the scientists and the snotty noble like we got going here with
Brooks and Emily.
Yeah. So what can you tell me about this photo? So is this character thing? Is this a Halloween thing?
That for Halloween, we all dressed as our characters in the Evil Interlude. So Haley is Nana Opal, the gingerbread witch. Emily is Dr. Viv, the vivisectionist alchemist. Brooks is Ed Turner, the cleric of Grotus, but the evil version. A lot of people like to try and play that as just crazy. His is definitely evil. And then Steve as the moon cursed barbarian Saw Moon Isle. So he turns into a were-tiger. That's why he's wearing the cat outfit.
Oh, okay.
And then I'm just the big bad, the Whispering Way informant boss guy.
Yeah. Like I kind of got that as like, unless you were playing, that's one reason I asked was like, were you gemming this or, you know, was this a cosplay thing? The guys from Fateful Fumble, the Kestrels, are big into cosplay, the female cast. Nice. And that's something separate they do from their pod, and they have like some epic costumes to back their, you know, their characters. Yeah. And I find a lot of podcasts like Halloween, they're like, let's dress as our characters, you know, and I love Halloween. I, up until years, like my kids are, one's 19, one's 23, but for the longest time, I literally had like a tickle trunk. Like Mr. Dress-Up, like I literally had a steamer trunk, and I saved every costume from the kids and myself and my wife for years. And like,
just freak them out.
Well, no. It's funny because it's like I never really cosplayed and I never really LARPed or anything. This was just strictly Halloween, you know. And it's like every October I get itchy to do Ravenloft, and then, you know, it's like, by the, no, yes, no, we should, we shouldn't do this. And then it's like by the 27th of October, I am begging my family and friends to play something Ravenloft, to dress, you know, and it's far too late. Like, to do something proper, you would need, you know, time or whatever. And I eventually stopped enabling myself and gave up the trunk. I was at a dollar store, and this father and son, you know, a couple of real, tailgate party, you know, like, guys, we don't dress up, no, you know, something like this, sure, kind of guy. Yeah. And they're looking at these boxes and crates at this dollar store, right? And he's like, it's not big enough. We'll never fit the body in there. You know, what are you looking at? You know, that kind of thing, right? And I'm like, so I couldn't help myself. I roll up on these guys, and I'm like, you know, I've got a steamer trunk that I'm looking to get rid of. If you guys pick it up, you know, it's all yours. No questions. You know, the kind of thing. And they're like,
no questions asked.
It's kind of like, they're like, where do you live? Right. And I just, it hit me. It's like, do I really want this guy knowing where I live? But, you know, yeah, meet me at a Tim Hortons, like it's a Kijiji sale or eBay sale, you know, the kind of thing. But yeah, gave up the trunk, you know, found some staff members that had kids.
Oh, yeah,
Halloween,
yeah.
And you know, bags of, right, and I'm down to a box that still has like a full-on ninja gi that I bought in Toronto years ago, like, I mean, full, like the tabby boots, everything. Yeah. For a 6'2" guy, this guy, when he was GMing, you know, because we had a Halloween party back in the day when I was 19 and everyone just dressed up, they just dressed, yeah, up as Halloween stuff, but they wanted to game while they were in costume.
Right.
So I did what you did, you know, all right. But I was like full on ninja sitting there, and to try to drink and eat chips and like with the man, it's like, this was a bad idea. You know, I was like, oh, wait, back in character. Oh, I'm the man, you know. And then it was like, oh, shit. Got rid of
that. A couple of costume beards. And there was one time we went out for Halloween, and I was as a full blown wizard with the beard and the hair and everything. And of course, tequila shots happened. And I had to take mine through a straw, through the beard. I didn't get the beard wet. And that was the slowest tequila shot I've ever taken. Not fun.
The lime's still sticking to you. Speaking of beards, man, you know what? Okay, I got a Christmas shot up of you here now. This Christmas shot of the podcast cast and you and the beard is the most charming, adorkable thing I have ever seen in my life.
Thank you.
It's so great. Everyone's wearing their ugly Christmas sweaters, right? That like something that Bill Cosby would be like, hey, it's Christmas, you know, that kind of thing. And then here you are, just popped over the back of everybody, like full on Santa beard. And no, yep, it's great. I love this picture. I actually was teasing the girls about it in their interview. So is this the kind of beard that had to suffer tequila? Like, does it still smell of tequila? Like,
I think the tequila beard was longer, and actually hair. It was like a costume prop beard. And yeah, that, they're impossible to wash, man. I mean, you just had to air it out. I never wore it again.
I'm going to skip the story about how one of my daughter's closest friends was the MC at her wedding last year, 2 years ago. Oh my God, I can't even remember. Last year. Showed up as Gandalf. I'm kidding you not. Like, the guy took the podium as Gandalf, and it's like, nobody got it. But a tight knit on my side and all of her friends, right? So it's like, you know, this guy was full on, you know, like prom for the groomsmen, mm-hmm, runs away, you know, and while everyone's doing their speeches, like, yours surely changes into, and then he just comes out and does, you know, full on. I mean, like, staff robes, full on. And he's talking about the Fellowship of the Ring, like, you know, the wedding ring. Yep. It's like, yep. So I didn't cry when my daughter got married. I didn't cry when this, but I cried when Gandalf got up on it. That's so beautiful. You know, that kind of thing. So anyway, long story short, dude, I'm feeling you. I'm totally feeling you. Like, yeah, you're sitting there with your shots. So you talked about the different shows. We talked about where you guys are shooting, you know, and we will off mic. We'll definitely talk about, like, anything we can do to help you guys. You know, we love your show.
For sure. Yeah, we appreciate it so much.
Yeah. We talked about the girls doing that, Tokyo Rose Pure Steam thing, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm still arguing with the GM, because even though I produce and edit, he's a GM, you know, like I can't force content in, right? And he doesn't like it. And I'm like, I keep pitching it. It's like, think of it like this big airship over Ustalov, you know, looking for the Damphir and doing this Tokyo Rose thing. And meanwhile, you've got all this. And he's just like, I'm not seeing this. It's like, oh, it's terrible. I got these talented girls that are going to, you know, do it for free, man.
Just let me do my dirigible.
Just let me do my thing, man. You know, I'll just slip it in editing. He doesn't need to know, right? which brings me to my next question is ideas for your show. This joke that I just kind of laid out, a new question I'd like to ask a DM is, you're in a room with fun, creative people pretending to be fantastic people in a fantasy setting, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys have a process for something, that's a go-to in the show? Like, do you guys have a before and after where everyone discusses the show, what we want to do, where we want to go with it, a new angle, you know, or is everything all on one or two people for the technical and the ideas? Everybody just shows up, plays, drinks, thanks, good night, you know, okay. Like, I'm just curious.
No, we definitely have a process. We actually all get together and usually it happens before the show rather than after, but we usually gather at the studio an hour to an hour and a half before we actually start recording, just talking about the show, talking about BHLP as a business. We do state of the business type meetings. It's gotten to that point, I guess, where we need to do that. And I take everybody's ideas, because everybody has such interesting and unique characters. I take everybody's ideas separately and tell them how I can weave them in without spoiling it for them, but kind of guiding the decision making in a way that is, oh, hey, if you want this character to go in this direction, that I can work with that. I can do, you know, I can add some extra stuff that'll make that a lot more relevant. So we do a lot of in-person just chatting about the show, but we do a lot of like Google Docs back and forth, emails back and forth, that kind of thing as well when we're apart, in order to, for me to be able to make every character shine the way that their players want them to shine. A lot of stuff happens off the cuff though. I mean, if you're not caught up to our show, apologies, a little bit of a spoiler, but like one of the characters starts to exhibit werewolfy tendencies, and I kind of brought that upon his character and asked forgiveness, not permission. So that does happen. That stuff happens. Much like another character gets possessed. We're playing with the corruption rules, which it's an optional rule set in Pathfinder. Paizo put it out with Horror Adventures. I really liked it. I thought it would work really well with Carrying Crown, especially because it's a horror podcast or a horror AP. And so I've been incorporating those in ways that I feel like suit the characters, but also suit the story. And so in those circumstances, I don't necessarily ask permission. I ask for forgiveness. But for the most part, we're all in constant communication. We're also in constant communication with just the fans. And like I've said earlier, I'll take an idea that a fan has had and bounce it off the rest of the group again and be like, hey, this was actually, you know, this was a really interesting idea, or this was a really deep cut and we could visit that again. And it would be really cool for the people that have been dedicated to the show, that have been really listening, to hear this. Why don't we run with that? So I think Discord has actually been our biggest asset. We have a pretty big Discord community and a pretty vocal Discord community. I'll say, when you were talking to me earlier about having everything on your phone, even just having Discord on my phone, I think I get a ping every 30 seconds and half of them are private DMs that are like, oh, hey, you GM this show, like talk to me about this, or like help me out. And I'm happy to do that. I'm more than happy to do that. And I do that for, you know, everybody in our community, but it's also like, oh, wow, I'm getting a lot of communication here, which, you know, I like. I don't mind people oversharing or over anything. It's, I love that kind of interaction with our fan base. I think it's one of the more valuable things that we get to do is not only bounce the show off of each other, but bounce it off of people that have outside perspectives It's why we took the slurping down from every episode to like 1 in 4.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. I usually end up through, I reached out to you through Twitter, and then we kind of got it. The new Zoom is kind of a cluster of trying to get on there, but we usually try to get people onto Facebook Messenger, which I have my phone, and not just to like, okay, like a behind the scenes, oh, can I log in? Can I talk to you? Is it up and running? Did you get my invite? Is to keep the conversation going. Not just with the guests, but I've got fans in the phone that I, you know, talk to personally. And at first, they're very overwhelmed that I just, well, you said, how quick do I answer? Well, was he standing there? It's like, no, my phone goes off and I just have a habit of grabbing it. You know, oh, what's okay? Yeah. Hi, you know, kind of thing. Talk to a fan, talk to a guest or coming up or previous or have questions. You know, I'm not a shy dude. And if you don't mind me hitting you up, and apologies, time difference, or I just forget it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm like, if I don't get this out of my head and like text it, and then, you know, oh, he'll be asleep, you know I forget. It's like, oh, maybe somebody else's phone is going off at 4 in the morning. I remember a cast member, I was so excited, I got up early and I was just texting somebody and they're like, it's 5 in the morning,
stop.
What are you doing? Oh, I'm sorry, I just figured you'd read these when you got up, right? And it's like, no, my phone is on at night, you doofus. Like, oh. Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the beauties of a diverse Discord community for us. It's like the convos never stop in there, because we got people from like Denmark logging on, and people from Australia and New Zealand, and obviously the US and the UK. And so it's constant. It's like all of the conversations are getting picked up because people are just getting up and getting on their phone at different hours of the day. It's, I think we've been doing, what we've called cabin fever prevention, which is where we hop on with anybody on our Discord onto voice chat, do like a Netflix party, watch the movie every Friday with some of the fans, like anybody that wants to chat just hops on. Mm-hmm. And some of our listeners that are in a different time zone have been saying, it's really weird on Saturday morning when I wake up and I see just 10 people in the voice chat drunk at 2 in the morning for you, you know, watching movies or whatever. So now we've proposed doing like a breakfast club for those people.
Got to name it different things. We tease one of our cast members, my son-in-law, Jay Tamlin, is in Japan right now. And when we record at 7:30 on a Friday night, it's 8:30 Saturday morning, like the next day.
Yeah.
So we're like, coming live from the future. Jay's just like, oh God, like I said, we never let it go. You know, but you get that. You have that, like I said, the different pings. And I got used to, in my defense, I got used to people not responding to me right away because they're at work, or they're, you know, because I'll come home my lunch hour. I'm lucky enough to come home from my work and I'll do a bunch of stuff and answer a bunch of questions and set it all up and go away. So it's kind of like a tagged email kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people people don't. I realize that if you're really quiet and you're jumping on stuff, or if you're really busy, you know, there's that delay, like an email. But for me, it's in text and whatever, you know, back and forth. A couple of other quick questions. You said you're making dice, but you're not selling them. Do you have merchandise? I swear I saw somebody wearing a Hideous Laughter t-shirt in one of these photos.
We do. Yeah, we have a merch store. It's an Etsy store, I believe. Merch is, you know, we have our logo. We have the logo for Zone of Truth. You can pretty much get all of your classic t-shirts, long sleeve sweatshirt, whatever on there. I think we even have a fanny pack on there. I don't know who's buying it, but if you are, God bless you. Put a couple brewskis in there.
Yeah, the girls mentioned that to me, and I was like, I went looking for it because I told them, I said, you know, if I ever make it a convention, I'm putting on the 6 foot Vader. Because no one imagine a geek. I just look like any other geek walking around. Hey, oh, here, listen to my podcast, right? But freaking Vader hands you a card, you're gonna read it. And if it comes out of a fanny pack, you picture Vader wearing a fanny pack, right?
I mean,
that's just something
that's
like
the most
hideous
con Vader I've ever heard of.
And it's like, I don't want my logo on there. I want something like the big skull that says Hideous Laughter on there. You know, just like, because, you know, people ask me, oh, is that you? No. This is them. This is me. You know.
This is
me. But be the force be with you. Yeah, that's everything. You can't, you know, unfortunately right now, like with things going on, like video is it, Zoom is it, you know? So like, I'm hoping somebody will watch this and realize it's like, hey, you know, maybe I will take the time to download Skype or something and try different, you know, not just to be social with your family, but have a go at this. Okay. Like,
yeah.
The YouTube standard is 160 kilobytes a second. for audio. Now, picture the difference, the days of 480p for a picture, and now we're up to 1080p for a picture, and now we're at 4,000 such and such, which is 4K. Amount of pixels per frame, blah, 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 to give you that uber, uber, uber high definition. The same thing works for sound. If you record stuff as a WAV file, that's like 700 kilobytes a second. Most podcasts take that, they crunch it down to an MP3, they upload it, and you have your 74 megabyte file that somebody quickly downloads. It's like 160 kilobytes a second. So we cheat. We take Audacity and we take OBS right now where I'm recording, and we set it to 320. Like, we max it out unnecessarily just to try to gain any extra oomph, not just in the voice, because it's unnecessary. It's more for the music, for what you lay in the background, because music can sound tinny as crap if you overlay it later or if you record it live, if you're crunched down to that, you know, that kind of thing. And this was just trial and error. I'm sure there are sound engineers out there going, oh, Jeff, you've completely missed what you could do, right? I'm just saying, like, if you listen to our stuff and it doesn't sound half bad, dude, I'll tell you the way I do it. It's not a trade secret. You know, I want there to be better quality audio out there because I really hate crap audio, you know, but that was just, you know, that's just me. I do still listen to Michael Kasebin, one of my mentor / online friends. Somebody helped me bigger to a small guy back in the day. He was like, I don't care about audio quality. I care about the story. I care about if you have something that I really want to share or listen to, then you've got me. I'll listen to your show. You know, and that really struck me as, you know, like, quality in chemistry as well as quality in audio. I was so paranoid about the audio quality. I knew I had chemistry with the guys, you know, as popular as the next GCP. No, but, you know, like, you can work on chemistry the more you play. And if you have guys you play with for years, great. And some people like your chemistry. Some people will not like your chemistry. Some people like drinking in a game. Some people don't like drinking in a game. Some people like, our thing is singing. Yeah, like, talk about happy accidents. I was recording and they were dicking around, and there's this great, our most popular Star Wars episode is not an episode. It's Matt Wett, who actually is a singer for his dad's band, singing a parody song of Star Wars, and we stuck it in. And then we were singing at the beginning of an episode, and I dared them. I was like, you know, you guys should sing this, right? And that's the one episode of big, like, likes and hearts, and, you know. So we went on about it again this season, and I was like, guys, like, our biggest thing is singing, right? And they're all looking at me like, you want us to, like, be a band or a cappella? Like, no, right? And they're all bitching about the time delay, because when you're on Zoom, there is that split second.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so that's difficult.
It would really be hard, right? But when I record it on my end, not only does it sound terribly awesome, right? So I'm you know, I'm beating them over the head with this idea, and some are singing or some are not. And then Aidan Willems, there's, like, this really uncomfortable break of, like, this did not work. And then out of nowhere, Aidan Williams breaks into a perfect Lion King. Yes!
That's perfect.
And I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. He's like, no, you got to edit that or I'll sue you. You know,
take that out.
Take that out.
Cut the mic.
Oh, come on. So this is what I was talking about, happy accidents, and asking you. And this type of thing, we're talking like, oh, that's got to go on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know, like, somebody's doing an interrogation of a character, and in Star Wars, it's, you know, it's not good cop, bad cop for us. It's good cop or airlock. You know, those are your choices. You know, we put that on a shirt. No one's bought shirt.
We made a shirt for our patrons because we have a tier that gets, like, special merch. Mm-hmm. We made a shirt. Brooks, who plays Ikmer on the show, is playing, like, a generally dumb half-orc. And he was spelling ugly for some reason. He was, like, teasing somebody on the show, and he was like, ugly, like, spelled it wrong, but it worked perfectly for his character. So he kept it in and made it a shirt. I'm starting to think now that Brooks is a source of a lot of happy accidents, which is a good thing.
Yeah, no, there's always somebody. But, like, I'm glad my very long-winded tangent and shameless self-pro can pull these stories out of you. That's another thing about the attack of opportunity. A lot of people don't get the idea of the show. So I'm pretty much every episode reminding the audience, in case this is the one episode they watch, that this started off as a joke, as a self-promo gag, because I love chatting with people, and their stories cause me to remember my own. And it's not like, oh, I can top your story. It's just a back and forth going, oh, I remember this time, you know, back, because GMs love sharing stories with other GMs and players. Like you said, they get in the
Discord. We don't get to share with our players. We don't get to share.
Yeah. The back and forth. So I'm really hoping that my interruptions and my tangents spark more in my guest as well. It's like, oh, right. And you know, and it just happened there. So see, it works.
You know, like, the system's working.
I asked you this question a while ago, and then finally after my tangent, you're like, oh, right. You know, the guy, the show, yeah, the thing.
There it is.
There you go. So a couple of questions to wrap up. First of all, you know, what's your latest project, or like, can you give a sneak peek of the future? Have you got something you guys are discussing, you know, pre-production, the future? What's the next thing for you guys?
So near term next step is actually we're recording it now. Haley and I are playing a duet campaign of Curse of the Crimson Throne. So we have a couple of episodes recorded. We'll be releasing that. And I think that's going to be really fun because it's one-on-one and we're playing around with some of Pathfinder's more unique rules like Gestalt characters and monstrous companions and that kind of stuff. So we're pretty excited to get some of that out. Like I said earlier, we've been playing Starfinder with Southern Tomfoolery. So if you join our Discord or their Discord, the links are there. We're still doing that. That's ongoing. So we're releasing, it's kind of a different release schedule. We've been releasing, you know how Paizo books and modules have parts? So it'll be like three parts a book or four parts a book. We've been releasing that in parts of the book. So we're on the final part of the first book and that'll be released shortly. But the first 12 episodes, which are the first two parts of the first book of Attack of the Swarm, are already out to listen to. In terms of other future far-looking stuff, I think what I'm really passionate about is converting some of the old APs to second edition and playing some second edition with my group. So I've got a bookshelf of old APs that I'm trying to decide which one I want to start converting. So that's somewhere in probably the far future, but we'll see how fast I can get through it.
Would you consider something new? Like, I know this is very limited material. Like, we were lucky enough that we did something really crazy. It's like, we were talking to doing Evil and we shot a pilot, but we put it down because, like, no one was doing the Evil campaign, Hell's Vengeance. This is going to be it. No one touches this. It'll be completely unique. This will be our biggest thing yet, you know? And we're all set up. And then out of nowhere, I'm like, guys, second edition's coming. What if we were the very first episode, like, pod to drop? And everyone's looking at me like, I'm nuts, like, we're not ready for that. I'm like, right, this is what we're going to do. Joe Gibson, I dug out an old friend, you know, like, he's the ultimate rules lawyer. He is neutral. He doesn't try to, like, only read you the part of the paragraph where he's right and skip the part. And the DM goes, oh, and or the other page. Like, he just loves the tactical of everything. He's big on the game and the tactics, not really the RP. And when he's playing, he's Joe. When he's talking about the book and the way the mechanics work, he gets excited.
Right? It's time to shine.
Yeah. So I'm like, I will read the story. You read the core and you're going to teach me the rules while I GM. And because everyone wants to learn, you know what I mean? Like a first edition GM, everybody like, what are you doing? You know, like the audience would already know the rule set and the GM would look like a moron, but I'm like, I'm going to look like a moron, but it's going to work because everyone's trying to learn the rule, you know, learn the rules. And instead of me going, here's the story. Oh, well, here's today's rule, says the GM, blah, blah, blah. We found it more interesting as an interaction that everybody had, like, you look up magic and you look up the base stuff. I'll look up some base stuff about combat and run the story. And we're back and forth, right? Yeah. There's been some fans that are like, we don't get it. Why are you not GM? You know, it's like, you know, but a lot of people are really keyed into this. Oh, that's cool. You know, a geeky moment with Joe, you know, he tells the rule.
Well, yeah, it's the concept of the player that is also the assistant GM.
Yeah.
And I love that concept because it takes so much off of your shoulders, even outside of rules. Like you can have an assistant GM that is tracking combats or, can track some of the other stuff. So it's not all on the GM. And I think that's like a great idea.
Yeah.
I think that's why, you know, you guys are Glass Cannon fans like that, that Androids and Aliens has moved to having David, the rules lawyer in there. So it's much faster. It's much quicker to have somebody else that's like, hey, I'm the expert on the rules. You keep the story going or you keep the combat going. And I'm gonna figure this out if I don't know it, or I'm gonna spit out a giant wall of text at you and tell you why you're wrong.
No, it's good. Most people think I'm actually absolutely insane for actually I run the tech as well as GM simultaneously, and they're like,
I'm right there with
and
you.
It's like what? And it's like I'm looking at people's setups. And it's like you can tell when the GM runs tech because the mixing board and everything's with him. Now, a lot of people on mixing board, if you set it up, right, it's all check, test. You're in the room, you set it up, and you're good. And you don't really need to touch it much unless you have an effects, right? For virtual tech, right, I'm constant. Like even right now, right? I've got five monitors up and running. You are here. I am here. I'm recording here and here. And even when you're talking, right, it almost seems rude to the guest because while you're talking, it's like, it looks like I'm not listening because I'm over here going, pulling up the next image. You see some guests going, is he listening to me? Is he? Okay, well, I'll just finish my story. It's like, no, dude, I'm running tech. And when the camera sees you, I'm like, ah, click, click, click. This. Where's my next image? Where's my next, you know, da, 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 da. But you get used to it. I guess my point is, you get into this mode where the people in your cast gravitate to what they're good at. This is the funny guy. This is the comeback line guy. This is your rules lawyer. This person is better on tech than that person. This person can save us for dead air because whatever they go on about is just interesting because they're very personable or charismatic on the microphone compared to the, you know, everyone has their niche and you grow into these niches. But that's all the audience sees of you. So one of my last questions I love to ask is, sure, everybody would love to do this for a living, but in the meantime, something's got to pay the bills or pay the debt if you're crazy enough rack up a credit card and then, like, you know, hey man, like, I wanted some technical questions. I see the mics you got. Are those Samsung Q2s?
So we were initially using Samsung Q2Us. The whole group had them. Then I moved to a Rode Pod mic. Then recently we upgraded everybody to SM7Bs. So I'm digging them. I'm digging them as the one of the editors. I wish I was using mine, but it didn't want to play nicely with.
No, that's fine. In layman's terms, okay, let me break something down for you. Okay, our go-to mic for the cast, okay, is the same as the Q2U, is the ATR Audio Technica 2100. Like, if people do a mic comparison, these two are very similar. They're very close in price. They're very close in function. They're dynamic mics. They even look very similar. And I actually own one Q2 and a bunch of 2100s, and the guys all have 2100s, right? Myself, I actually have a Audio Technica 2035. Not like the popular, well, it looks like the very popular Audio Technica 2020. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is strictly, unlike the other ones where you can phantom power with an XLR cable, or like the Yetis and stuff that are strictly USB. They get the phone jack in the back and it's USB, right? Personally, I found those sound very good, but as soon as you get into phantom power, you realize how the direct USB mics almost sound muddy. Like, you know,
it's true,
right? Well, people are like, oh, I don't like the hiss. It's like, there's stuff you can do about that with the level and gain.
Right. You can take that right out.
Yeah. Like live or in, you know, in editing, there's ways, right? So then moving on. Okay. So this in Canadian dollars. So let me just try to do the math quickly in my head for American. Okay. This is a $200 microphone Canadian, which means it's about $160 American. The Q2s and the 21s that everybody was using are $80 to $120 American Canadian. Okay. For you guys, it'd be like a 50 to a 90 kind of thing. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. They ran us like $60.
Right. The Rodes, that's a $400 Canadian. That's a $300 US podcasting mic. Yep. The SM7, dude, for me, that's a $400 microphone. Plus, you need a $200 cloud lifter so it doesn't sound really quiet on the line between your mixer. Right. So for me, that's like $500-$600 a pop. Per cast member, right?
In America, per cast member.
So for yourself, I'm guessing it's more like a $290, $300 microphone?
For us, the SM7Bs are each still $400.
Oh, they're still $400. Okay.
Yep. So they're $400, and then
can we see that bad boy again? Can you bring that again?
Yeah, man. Yeah. I'll bring it up behind me.
And in case you're wondering, fans, yes, that is the official microphone that the Glass Cannon podcast use. And now Griffin has taken one step up into the audio. Right? It's like everybody wants. But again, there are ups and downs for everything. And we won't get into too technical stuff. But something I love talking about, some very basic things. About a basic microphone is the difference between a condensing microphone and a dynamic microphone. And my best comparison is, you know, the old Shure mics that Freddie Mercury screams into? That's a dynamic microphone. So is the 2100, because the way it's set up, it doesn't peak easily. You know, it doesn't break out and crackle when you scream into it. But a condensing microphone, they peak, but because instead of a pin with a coil around it and your voice hits the pin and goes magnetized, this has this very thin plate. A large thin plate in it, and when your voice hits it, it's a bigger surface, and you can get that warm natural voice, you know, the microphone voice. We went through microphones because my voice is actually very, very flat. It does not record well, so to make it sound better, I had to do some live production, and I have to do some post-production and stuff just to make me sound not very flat. I have a very flat voice, but I'm a very animated person. And if you get me doing a voice for a character, then all this stuff, right?
Right.
You know,
right.
But the bass line is just like on Xbox when I used to play the guys, they called me Razor. And I'd come on, if I talked too much, they'd start going into the mic. Like, I'm like, why would I fucking shave her, right? The British guy's like, okay. My point being, whether you have a Snowball, a Yeti, a Meteor mic, all these plug and plays that are good to go, there's nothing wrong with that, you know.
Oh, no.
But
using a Yeti right now, man.
Yeah, yeah. And you sound good on it because you've probably taken the time to learn a couple things about how it works, how sensitive it is in the room. You know,
big thing with, like, you know, any condenser is just treat your space, and it doesn't have to be expensive, but, you know, sit under a blanket if you need to. If you want to use a condenser mic and take advantage of the warmth, it's going to bounce off your walls, it's going to echo, it's going to get room tone if you're not quiet. That's why podcasts use dynamic mics, because people don't have perfect recording studio. I mean, we have a studio where six people sit right next to each other. If we were all on condenser mics, it'd be you'd hear half my volume in the next person's mic, and it'd be impossible. So you really gotta, as you're choosing this kind of stuff, think about, hey, we're all remote. If I can treat my setup, maybe I get like a Rode NT1 and there's something like that that is a good condenser microphone. Or, hey, I'm not in a treated space, my Q2U is gonna be great.
Yeah.
Like it's going to point right at my face, not going to.
The Samsung Q2U and the Audio-Technica 2100, if you're looking for best bang for your buck, like the cheapest yet best sound quality, you know what I mean? For that threshold are definitely those two mics. First, they're quiet mics, which means they don't pick up a lot of the room. You can put two guys side by side each other and his mic isn't picking up your mic, right? Not that that's an issue these days. Second thing is, unlike the Yeti, which is extremely sensitive, they have the option for both Phantom and direct USB depending on your budget. Which is crazy good. Third, a lot of people don't know that your real criminal in the room is your corner, not a big flat open wall. It's the corner.
Yeah, we have the corners
that are
the bass traps in the corners.
Yeah. It's a corner room.
Gotta watch it.
Have you ever stripped a bedroom to paint it? And all of a sudden everybody goes, oh, look, cool, there's an echo. It's like, you don't necessarily need foam padding. You just need crap in your room. Just, you know, like your gaming room that has a bookshelf and all that stuff. If you can fit that in, that breaks up the sound nicely. You don't
get a carpet.
Yeah,
what a carpet.
Seriously, I drape paint on walls and, you know, rippling things and, you know, like,
leave your old couch in there. You can sit across from
you. Exactly.
It's one of those things that was really fun when we started out. A lot of people were interested in what our setup was because we started out with pretty decent audio quality, and I love talking about this to, you know, any new podcast that'll listen, because as you were talking about, yes, we want to listen for your story, but there's somewhat of a minimal acceptable audio quality that I think your story is not going to get the exposure you want it to, because there are people that will listen and be like, I just don't want to put up with this. Somebody else is playing this or whatever. I'm going to listen to the better sound. It happens. And so if you're a new podcast, like, I mean, talk to the experienced people, DM me or Jeff or any of these podcasters that you've listened to that have a good sound, and they can tell you where they started out, and they can probably point you to a decent budget build that's going to get you at least sound that's above the rest of the pack that maybe is using the Snowball in the middle of the table, which, you know, is okay if you're starting out, but you can do a lot with like $100. I mean, we use Behringer 8500s with a crappy cheap audio interface that had the inputs for five people at the very start. And those mics, I mean, they're $15.
Yeah.
And they sound great because you're in separate tracks. It sounds so much better. So that kind of stuff I love sharing with the podcasting community, because I think that whether you're remote or all in the same room, the TTRPG podcast is a completely different beast to set up audio-wise than almost any other thing out there. You're never sitting there with a panel talking about like crappy movies, right? You never have a weird setup table talking about movie reviews or whatever. And we're in the unique place where you kind of have to figure out how to jump and jive and get your audio sounding okay.
Yeah, I'm almost worried we might mislead people. One of the biggest things I found is like, oh, I don't want to spend a lot of money because what if it's not going to last? That's true. I mean, there's you know, it's a personal choice. If you think your guys are getting together, your gang, every Friday anyway, then you have the commitment. And then you just come up with the money. If you're like, we should do this, we should podcast, everyone's doing this, you try and do something new, and you start dumping money $100 a head, because that's where, you know what I mean? And then then you could find yourself 6 months in, 3 weeks in, and spouse, job, kids, blah, and somebody just goes, I'm sorry, I can't do this. I thought I could, you know, but it's just, you know, the commitment thing is the bigger thing over audio quality for me. And then you can move into it. I guess the biggest thing what Griffin was saying here is something that we could both maybe, you know, for a new guy, new person to do this. Something Joe O'Brien said, advice from the GCP really struck me. He was like, go play a year. Don't start a podcast now. Go play a year. Work on your chemistry. Work on your work. You know anything? Yes, every day more podcasts emerge. And yes, the sea of fifth edition pods and everything gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you will get lost in it. But the ones that are staying afloat are the ones that took the time to develop story, chemistry, and audio. And there are stuff. Yeah, like I'm 3 years old. This is my 3 year anniversary, like a couple days ago. Our first this podcast and our Star Wars one out of the six that we shoot are 3 years old. And we have clawed our way to the middle-ish. You know what I mean? There's guys like Griffin and other guys and stuff that we totally support that are coming out of the gate hot because they took the time to grow off the air as much as on the air, as opposed to like panicking and just going, you know what, just buy the, you know, let's go, let's, you know, time's wasting, you know, every year we're losing our chance because somebody like Adventure Zone or whatever, you know, that made the algorithms on YouTube, or that had an artist fall in love with them and gave them free art. You know, we're missing out. Yeah, those days are gone. Okay. you can't look at stuff that's a year old or 10 years old or whatever and go, well, look, they started off small and they have a, you know, they sound like shit and now they're huge. So we could just put it. Sure, it could work. It could still work. It still does. There's an amateur audience that likes amateur stuff. There's a pro audience that likes pro stuff. And there's the, you know, you're just never going to please everyone, and you can't drive yourself crazy trying to figure out what everybody wants. And the thing that I found the most everyone's telling me that I now try to tell everybody else is being genuine to yourself. Do what you want to do, and that love of it comes over on the recording, and it hooks people.
Make the kind of show you want to listen to.
Right.
And if it's out there, then, you know, emulate it. If it's not out there, you're probably even in a better position.
Exactly.
Make it.
And if you're worried about like, oh, we don't have a budget now, but we could, if we like it, if it takes off, then do a one shot. Do something small that can end so that you can come back out, re-release as if it was your first thing. And that becomes like a fun, you know what I mean? If you commit to a 6 book AP, like, oh, I don't know, Mummy's Mask 4 years ago, and try to do everything up front and then go through, oh, I don't know, 50 cast members in a year because your buddies, your friends bail on you because of the wife, because of the job, because you really want to be me? You want to be this guy who's up to his eyeballs in debt and exhausted, but having time? It's like, don't be me. You know, like, you got to do what's right for you, man. I'm doing this my way because I just love doing it my way. Would I remake it for anybody else? Would I recommend what I do for anybody else? No. There's easier ways, man. A lot easier ways. You know, this is just kind of how I fell out. Talk to someone like Griffin. He has a different way of going about it. You know, the different age groups, talking to the young podcasters, talking to the mid-level, you know, type of thing, they have a different way of approaching and might be more relatable to what you want to do as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the coolest things that we've started to see in the Paizo podcast, is that it used to be all a certain age group and now it's very varied. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's people that are 18 on these podcasts. There's people that are in their 50s on these podcasts and everywhere in between. And maybe even at the higher end of that, not in Pathfinder, but I know there's like DMing grandma out there. I've seen her Twitter account and you know,
I love
it's
that.
Awesome.
I had
really
Vince
cool.
on the show. I had Vince on. Oh, yeah. I had him on the show. It was like the best interview. His wife didn't want to, one of the main cast didn't want to be on the interview. And halfway through, he's talking to her through the doorway. So I literally called my wife, who was not happy about this, you know, from downstairs. And I'm like, honey, come up here. You got it. You know, I need you. Right. So she comes up. What's the matter? I'm like, come here, you know, get her on camera. Like, look, right. And now I'm like daring his wife. Like, see, you see my wife. See how easy this is. Right. Kind of. So not only did she sit down, she took over the interview, was as much fun as Vince, if not better. And then proceeded to attack of opportunity me. Twice.
Oh, nice.
It's one of the most fun interviews I ever had. And like I said, this is what I love about this particular show, The Surprise is Talking, because we're not just gaming. We're just talking about gaming and talking about your experiences. And I love that. I'll never get tired of this, meeting the people. And then it gets you revved up going, now I want a game. Damn it. Friday.
We talk about it forever, but it's like, when we get to the meat and potatoes.
Yeah. Friday is too far away, you know, too far away. Anyway, sorry. I didn't mean to name drop or something. You mentioned a bunch of stuff.
Oh, no. Yeah. I feel like you and I could go around on a tangent about any given question for about 45 minutes.
Yeah,
we could fill the whole thing.
I do feel, though, there's a point where, like, the joke becomes too much and I'm tangenting, you know, a little much. So I must apologize to the Hideous Laughter fans. Not to you. I don't care about you. I'm worried about your fans that already hate me. No, you will see more of Griffin. Where? Let's talk about where you can find Griffin in the show on social media.
Sure. Yeah. Me personally, I'm at GM Hideous on Twitter. I'm at Hideous Laughter GM on Instagram. I'm all over Discord. You can find me in a lot of other shows' Discords. Just look for me. I'll be like at Griffin Hideous Laughter or something. I'm in plenty of communities there. But if you want to find the podcast, we're at Laughter Hideous on Twitter. We are Hideous Laughter Podcast on Facebook. We're at Hideous Laughter Pod on Instagram. Discord is all over our social media and on our website. Our website's hideouslaughterpodcast.com. You can reach us at thehideouslaughterpodcast.com or thehideouslaughterpodcast at Gmail. If you want to email us, we respond to those as well. I think we have a Snapchat. I don't run that. we're hoping to get into some Twitch streaming and stuff, but more to come on that. So we don't really have the stream set up yet. But yeah, that's where you can find us. We're very active. The whole cast is on the various social media accounts. So if you have a targeted question, that mm-hmm. person will respond to it. Otherwise, usually I will. I am on most of them, which hurts my I think the vibration in my phone is going to give out. we're happy to communicate with anybody. Any questions, just want to shoot the shit, join the Discord. We'll talk your ear off.
This has been the longest interview to date.
I am long-winded.
No, you're great. No, I'm the one that's unfortunately like pushing the wrong way too far, but I'm just looking over the time. We're at 90 minutes. It's like, I don't think I've ever managed to hold anybody here in the chair for 90 minutes. One last question then. Sure. I'd love to talk to you all day, but one of the questions I won't give up from the new show, the old show, whatever, is asking someone what they do for a living. Some people don't like answering this question, but I find it fascinating to not just to relate to everybody out there that it's like, hey, you know, like I put ketchup on my fries. I go to work. I 9 to 5. I do whatever you do. So if you don't mind me asking, like outside of this, you know, what did or what do you do for a living? You know, what pays the bills?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I studied finance and psychology way back when, went into finance as a career. I've been in corporate finance for a couple of years for mainly large retail companies. Recently, I've moved into planning. I do location planning, which is kind of like putting the right product in the right stores, analyzing what stores sell what better, projecting that kind of stuff out. Sucks that stores are closed. Not a lot to do from that end. But yeah, I have a finance and a planning background. So I do a lot of that kind of stuff. I worked pretty heavily in supply chain a couple years ago and kind of wear that hat occasionally. So all over the place, mostly in corporate America. Fortunately, where I've worked doesn't require me to wear a suit or cut my hair, clearly.
Well, you know, long hair is in right now because all the barber stores are closed. So
yeah, you see, yeah. I was just ahead of the curve. I haven't gotten cut for 2.5 years. So when the barbers were closed, I was like, oh, well.
See, I'd be telling people, like, oh, I had this cut like right at the beginning of COVID. I don't know what you're talking about. That's just weird. Rogaine.
Yeah, it just all grew out. It's the conditioner I've been using.
The guys, we get this running joke in Taldor on Pathfinder in the War for the Crown. The noblemen are called the bearded. The gentry are called the bearded. Mm-hmm. And the common man is referred to as unbearded. So they don't say common plebe. They don't say, like, that's the terminology they use in Taldor. It's really cool.
Yeah.
All my cast members, besides the ladies, have beards, save me.
So you're the unbearded.
So the guys bug me. I'm like, well, I'm the DM. I'm the common man, but right. So my wife hates a beard on me. Anyway, we were quarantined for 14 weeks and I grew out my beard. And then I cut it and did this horrible Tony Stark thing because she's a big Robbie Downey Jr. fan to try to like meet her halfway. And she's like, no. Anyway, finally, I just got tired because like touching your face in a hand wash.
Yeah,
you don't want to be doing that. So it started driving me crazy. So I shaved and then I made the Tony Stark thing wrong. And then I made I did it wrong. I guess instead of I had the chin done, but the stache was too thick. So it was like Tom Selleck and
Tom Selleck Dally, instead.
Yeah. Okay. And anyway, I took a photo of that. Anyway, I fixed the mustache and showed her and she had a good laugh and still laughing. So I finally shaved off. But I fixed it and I forgot to take a photo as a joke, you know, cause I was doing all this self-quarantine selfie stuff. Right. And now that's gone to history and now I'm you know, back to me.
You got to send the bearded picture.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they don't call you the unbearded anymore.
Oh, the guys were, you know, we game. There's actual games of me with the beard. Like we've been putting up content for the entire, isolation.
Right.
If anything, we've doubled down and actually started releasing banked episodes so that there's stuff going up like every day. You know, just to keep people from getting bored. It's like, hey, we got a solution for you. We're just going to give you like everything we have. You know, like we feel bad for the pods that have dropped off. It's like, well, maybe we could, you know, help fill the gap and people discover us and, you know, and this show as well. Not just to go, ha ha, here's our chance. You know, we will give all our product and you guys, ha ha, are going to fall behind. No. So I've been doubling down on this show as well to try to promote all the other shows that are out there and meet guests and stuff like yourself. So final question. And like I said, I really don't want to date stuff. Like about COVID or whatever, but I gotta ask, now that you may or may not have some more time around the house, right, has this really been a good thing for your GMing career? Do you actually have more time to read? Do you actually have more time to do that bonus game one-on-one or something, you know, that you always wanted to do? Like has there been anything positive come out from this lockdown for you or the podcast? Anything at all?
I think so for sure. My notes have definitely gotten even better and more in depth. I think I've read the entirety of Carrie and Crown now more times than I care to admit. And getting to my backlog of APs that I have is something that I've been able to do. So I've been able to look into some of the stuff that I've just had and has sat on the shelf and gotten to look into 2E a little bit more than I probably have. Really excited again about that. You know, because we're quarantined and we've been gaming a little bit less because our remote setup isn't quite where we want it yet. But being able to game with just me and Haley has been really fun. And some of the best stuff that I think we've recorded in a long time, me and her, just because it's directly us role playing off of each other instead of the whole group. It's definitely a different feel that I've been enjoying. So I think that's the good that's come out of it. It is annoying that we've had to move our just home game weekly stuff to Roll20 and that kind of stuff. And we were going with such a great RP vibe in our home Return of the Rune Lords game that I feel like it's dropped off a little bit just because we're all remote. Not everybody has a good webcam. Not everybody's on video. It's really hard to read the cues from just audio. It just feels like we need to get over the technical glitchiness of some of the stuff to make it an experience that's, I want to say, substitutable. We're not quite there yet, but the home stuff we've been doing has been so much fun, and I'm up to my eyeballs in dice, and I've been printing minis every day and have a backlog of stuff that I need to paint, so...
I still got to get to that backlog.
Still got to get to it, man.
Come on. I know you got the time. We've been talking to Griffin Norman from the Hideous Laughter podcast. They are doing the Pathfinder Adventure Path Carrion Crown. To describe it in a nutshell, I think you kind of got that classic gothic vampire horror Castlevania kind of feel. I mean, one cover's got werewolves, one cover's got vampires, one cover's, you know, like Ustalov is sort of a German Transylvania, like a dark oppressed Russia, you know, like, and if that's your thing, you know, not to mention these lovely people in their, I want to say late 20s, early 30s.
Yep, late 20s, all of us.
really can help set a standard for a couple things. One, two of them are couples. And two, they're great friends. And there's no holds barred in this podcast. As editor, you can hear the moments that like maybe they should have cut, but it's like you're really glad they didn't. You're just really glad they didn't. It's like watching Big Mouth on Netflix. It's like, why am I watching this terrible, disgusting? But you binge it. You do. Yep. You know, that type of thing. You just watch it alone. You don't watch it with anybody else. You just watch it with your own thing, kind of thing.
Unless you want to talk to the other degenerates on the Discord. That's where you get the
type of thing. Not a degenerate. One of the better Carrion Crown, if not, in my personal humble opinion, the best Carrion Crown podcast out there to date. They are taking the world by storm. Their popularity is growing. Get on this bandwagon. I don't think you're going to be disappointed. There's a reason why these guys are getting so popular. And I just wanted to thank Griffin. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been a blast, but also quite the conversation. I was like you. I just never run out of stuff to talk about.
There's and, stuff to talk you know. About. You know, oh, you. No, you.
Go ahead.
You. And we will see you next time on Attack of Opportunity.